Hey, welcome to Program 3 of the Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show. I'm your host, Jay Hoskins, and sitting right across from me is the one and the only Crafty. First up, music slightly off your radar. This is 98DA from the album Star Pit. That, my friends, was 98DA, local rock punk legends, and their song You Might Find from the album Star Pig. We're going to play another song from 98DA later, but before we do, I just want to point out that the lead guitarist and main songwriter in 98DA is none other than Dave Clark of Dave's Diss. That's right. If you take the time to head down to 2350 Lakeshore Boulevard West, you can shake hands with a genuine Toronto rock and roll legend. Dave Clark not only talks the rock, but he lives it as well. And if you're really nice, maybe he'll tell you about the time he opened for White Zombie. Moving right along, it's time for
Crossfire.
And tonight's victims are Crafty.
No, they're not crafty. I'm not one of the victims. My Chemical Romance and The Flaming Lips.
Okay, let's start off with My Chemical Romance. The name of the album is The Black Parade. And this is getting a lot of buzz. People are really, really liking this album. I really love the music on this album. There's some really great guitar playing and great hooks, especially on the track Teenagers and Famous Last Words. And the lyrics, they're good. There's a sort of concept album about death, and the lyrics are really insightful, and they're really good. But I still feel the singer is singing to my 13-year-old daughter. I don't have a 13-year-old daughter, but if I did, I'd be very wary of his intentions. And, you know, on the song Mama, he almost breaks out of it. But overall, I feel he's written an album that's too mature for his voice.
Or too immature for your old generation.
Maybe.
Ooh, just too old to dig band. Yeah, well, there was a lot of young guys at the shop that felt the same way, and it got cut off halfway through the album. Not even halfway, a few songs into it. I'm not a big fan of the guy's vocal. Also, as we all know, I don't like whiny pop punk, so I think it's a generational thing. I don't think. Well, actually, my son's 17, and he likes Ozzy Osbourne and Stones, so you like what you like. But it's part of that. Like, I mean, I think it's like, to me, come off as their attempt to do, you know, to tell out Green Day on their big epic comeback album. And I guess in their genre of music, it is epic and it is great because it's about as good as it'll ever get. But like you said, the voice doesn't speak to my generation. Does to yours? The young people, that speaks to their generation.
It doesn't sound like it goes with the music. The music is written in a much more mature vein than the voice that actually goes along.
I don't think that voice goes with the immature music as well. Like punk rock and rock and roll never will sound good to me with somebody going, "Hi, I got my mommy." But I've seen the young kids freak out for Good Charlotte and all these other bands, and they all have whiny singers. That's their voice. That's the voice of their the whiner generation. The whinies. Hey, there's yuppies, hippies, and now there's whinies. We've got to call them emo. We'll call them whinies. The whiner generation. They're the whiners. Whiners. That's it. It's an epic pop punk whiny album. Brilliant. Yeah, not.
Yeah.
Flaming Lips.
Flaming Lips. Wow, this is one weird album. Took me a long time to warm up to this album, and I guess maybe that's the sign of a really good album. It didn't come to me immediately at all, and I lent the album to a couple of other people, and they felt exactly the same way. They ended up liking it, but it took a long time for them to get there. It doesn't really have a clear hit like Do You Realize from Pink Robots, but the opener Yeah Yeah song and Ambulance Driver come pretty close. There's no jelly. Some really either. Solid tracks.
There's no jelly either.
There's no jelly.
Yeah, I only knew them for Jelly up until this album.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? You know, Crafty. You know what this sort of reminds me of? It reminds me of being. This whole album reminds me of being on a mountain road, and you're driving up the mountain road, and on either side of you is like this big chasm, and you're doing your best to keep your wheel straight, and occasionally it looks like you might go for the guardrail. And that's kind of how I felt about the whole album. It's got everything from, there's a Prince-sounding song called Free Radicals. There's some Miles Davis influence stuff. It comes across to me like a demented Pet Sounds. It's got that kind of feel to it. It's got a lot of melodic, really tuneful stuff happening, but it's just all over the map. It's a weird ride, but it's worth every mile of it. It's a great album. It is a really great album. It's just not an album that people will listen to right away and get, I think.
Well, I don't. I loved it. I loved it from the second I put it on, and I don't care that there's not a jelly or a hit, and it's good. I mean, I've read about them. I know who they were, and I've heard the songs without knowing them. But I thought the whole album is. I'll go so far as to say that I think it's a contender for one of the top 10 new albums of the last 10 years.
It is a great album.
It really, you can listen to it from beginning to end, and that's what I think in our quest to find new albums, I think we found a contender, The Flaming Lips. What's the name of the album?
At War with the Mystics.
I think it's a great album, and I hear they're a great band live, and I hear they're pretty pissed off this summer when they're at Toronto and they only got to do like 25 minutes on the island. Five songs, and they cut them off. I'm sure the audience was pissed too because it was so cold down there, I imagine.
Yeah.
But great album. I think great album for sure.
Okay.
You're listening to Radio 2069, Rock and Beyond.
We're going to do albums that deserve to be played again, and my choice tonight has a lot of really interesting playing on it. My choice tonight is the Sutherland Brothers and Quiver, Lifeboat.
Oh, okay.
Do you look kind of confused there, Crafty?
Oh, it says Nick Drake here. And the Goldfrapp was supposed to be mixed with Iron Maiden.
Well, that's just wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, Cellar and Brothers and Quiver. Let me tell you about this band, because this band sort of came together by accident. What was happening is that the Sutherland Brothers had done two sort of kind of folky albums, maybe in that Al Stewart kind of vein before, and they were asked to open for The Who. And they kind of said, well, we really can't open for The Who because we don't really have a band. And there was this other band called Quiver, which had two sort of middle albums that, you know, they were okay. They were kind of bar bandy, but they didn't really have the songs. So Quiver and Sutherland Brothers came together and formed this six-piece band. And the first album they did was an album called Lifeboat.
Not Come Together?
Not Come Together.
Not Let's Join the Band
Again. No, it's called Lifeboat. And it's a really great album. It's got a lot of really neat things happening in it. There's 10 tracks on the album, and it kind of goes sort of melodic rocker to like ballad, rocker to the ballad, like folky sort of thing. So the two things are really integrated really, really well. The guitar player on the album is Tim Renwick. And he ended up going and playing on a lot of Al Stewart stuff afterwards when he left the band. And became a really really neat session player. I think he's on that Smoke on the Water thing that they did with all the vocalists with Paul Rogers and different. It was a charity single.
Smoke on the Water.
Yeah, it was a 12-inch charity single, and he was one of the guitarists on there.
What year is this band from?
1974.
All right. Well, that's probably the guitar player. The guitar player has a very almost Mark Knopfler kind of sound.
Yeah. Very precise, and very tight.
Clean, little, nice. Yeah, good player. Yeah. Really, yeah.
And this album also has the song Sailing, which Rod Stewart made really famous later on. He was a real big fan of Sutherland Brothers and Quiver. And it's just a great album. It's got a song called Had You Had a Vision, which is just really boppy and rocky, and it's there's a real honesty to it that I really love, and a timelessness to it.
I'll have to give it a listen. I've never heard it.
Well, it's right over there, so you can listen to it later.
Well, if you had given it to me last week, I would have known it was listening this week. All right.
And the reason not to get the greatest hits, well, there's two reasons not to get the greatest hits. First of all, the greatest hits, even though they have the same cover, they have the Lifeboat on the cover for the greatest hits for the Sutherland Brothers. It's just the Sutherland Brothers, and it's just a combination of their first couple of albums and these songs done without Quiver. So let's not get the greatest hits at all. But the other reason is just it's got this great song in the beginning called You Got Me Anyway, which is just really boppy, and it goes right into Sailing. And Sailing is a wonderful rock ballad. You know, it's sort of that How Long thing that Ace used to do and stuff. It has that really nice sound to it. So, yeah, it's Sutherland Brothers and Quiver, and the album's called Lifeboat.
Well, I'll have to check it out, and so should you.
Okay.
Time is running, but I laid away. Have not has-beens, has-beens. What you think matters not to me. Your brain food died, no calorie.
That once again was 98DA with their song Psychoactive Wildcard, which was originally only available from the four-song cassette EP, but now is a bonus on their second CD, Blitzkrieg, which is only available right here at virtuallyaudio.com. All the recorded works of 98DA can be purchased from this website in our Virtually Vinyl section. What can I say? If you have the goods, flaunt it. And 98DA is definitely good rock and roll music on anyone's scale. This week and every week, Music Slightly Off the Radar is brought to you by John Long and Longshot Records. Longshot. Blasting through musical mediocrity.
The irrelevant rock and roll and music show. Here's Retro Retrospective. Or I've got $100 in my pocket.
Now it's time for a retrospective, or I've got $100 in my pocket, where we talk about an artist and four albums of that artist, which we really think you should go out and get. Tonight, Jimi Hendrix. Take it away, Crafty.
Absolutely. Well, you could say we're picking on one of the obvious ones, but there's so many tracks that are being ignored by young Hendrix band, and should be explored more again from older Hendrix fans. Off the first album, which there's so many songs that actually it's pretty much what you'll find played always is off the first album. You just don't hear that much played off the rest of the albums. And even off the first album, without mentioning all the ones you know, like Foxy Lady and Hey Joe and When Cries Mary and Purple Haze, and these are all great songs and stuff like that. There's three songs to me that still stand up to the test of time, which will never go away. And that's Third Stone from the Sun, the instrumental. Is This Love or Confusion? And I Don't Live Today. Those songs to me, they're just, I still can't figure them out. I just listen to them and I just go, this is just mind-boggling. Personally, I don't need to hear Purple Haze again. And Foxy Lady I can still have because it's a fun song. But the other hits, they're great. I mean, When Cries Mary is a beautiful piece. And I remember as a kid, I was never that big fan of Red House, which is funny. I think that was only on the Smash Hits anyway. I don't think it was on the first album.
Yeah,
it's on the Smash Hits, which sounds very much like the first album because it was really just a reissue of the first album, but it was like a few other songs that weren't on the first album. So the first album's worth checking out. And if you do, just like I remember when I first heard the song Waterfalls on the soundtrack to see something, Seattle song, some song about the grunge scene. And Jimmy was from Seattle. And I go, why would they pick this song? Well, it was one of the songs that was never played too much.
Yeah.
And it sounded fresh. But Is This Love or Confusion? And I Don't Live Today still. And if you pick just one, it'd be Is This Love or Confusion. You just never hear it played ever. And it's an amazing piece, the wall of feedback, but controlled feedback, feedback as music. Moving to the second album, Axis, I mean, with the little intro that goes on there, like, I remember the first time someone played it to me, and they kept playing it over and over again, just listen to that hi-hat sound. And this guy had these Century 3s, EV Century 3s, they're very accurate big speakers, there's an audiophile in my neighborhood. And he'd play it back and over again. To this day, that still sounds like it was one of the greatest recordings, and it's just so different. It starts off with feedback. You think, oh, he's going to do all the same. Here it goes again. But no, he's laying to this almost jazz sound with these clean wah-wah guitar and his, you know, brushes. And it just, and then he, you know, just, and every song, there's a song that, I mean, there's really a few throwaway songs on that record, but very strong again, Spanish Castle Magic, just smoking song. Which I've only heard bettered, actually, and this will make some people cringe, but I saw Yngwie Malmsteen play it at the Rock and Roll Heavens back in the 80s and actually take it a step beyond, which was pretty amazing. It's got the studio version of Little Wing on it, which is cut short. It sounds like it's cut short.
Great song.
It is a great song. Totally killed by today's contemporary Stevie Ray wannabes. They just stop playing it. Play something else. If Six is Nine, I remember at the time not being my favorite song. Having heard it just the other day, again, because it's not been overplayed down my throat, it sounded great. Heavy song, heavy lyrics. You know, he was obviously thinking that's the Dylan comes out in him. It's crazy. I don't know. It sounds like he's playing just the mouthpiece of a clarinet at the end or an echo. Pretty crazy, whatever that's supposed to be. Well, I guess we'll never know what that is unless you could talk to somebody that was there. Side two opens up. You've got what I consider a throwaway song by Noel Redding. You Got Me Floating, which I never liked that song, and I used to always take it off. I make my compilation and take that off, and I do the same thing on the Electric Ladyland album. But I remember on the tribute album to Jimi Hendrix that was done with The Cure and The Pretenders, PM Dawn.
Stone Free, that was what it was called.
Yeah, PM Dawn did a version of You Got Me Floating. It just rocks. I have it on 12-inch 45. I used to spin it. It just rocks. It's one of the ones... And that just on that album that work. I mean, it's funny, that album. I remember the first time I heard The Cure doing Purple Haze and going, oh, this is sacrilege. And then I thought, well, hold on, they're doing Jimi Hendrix. And then you hear, you know, oh, these other bands, Spin Doctors, and even Eric Clapton, like doing these barroom versions, trying to sound like, do the songs like sort of like Jimmy would have done a maybe if they could, and they can't. And The Cure became one of the songs that stands the test of time on that album. It's The Cure's version of that, Belly's version of... oh, what do they do? They what song do they do? I think they do Are You Experienced and just break it down to nothing. And The Pretenders do Axis Bold as Love, and PM Dawn, being my second choice, do a song I didn't even like by Jimi Hendrix.
My favorite song off that second album is Castles Made of Sand.
Yeah.
I just love that song. I heard that on a compilation, and I really hadn't been into Hendrix that much, and I always... What I had heard of Hendrix was always this big, loud noise that everyone talked about. And then I heard that song and I went, this is really nice.
Sure. It shows this Curtis Mayfield influences those little inversions. That's basically from the Chitlin Circuit and the R&B style. But he takes it and then adds the Dylan and of course, the Jimi Hendrix to it. And backed by a rhythm section such as Mitch and Noel, you got that sound. It's a classically great album. I think that actual track was... engineered too by Terry Brown, who's Toronto resident now. I know he filled in for Eddie Kramer, who was off, and I remember because Terry Brown, I did a demo with him in 1974, of all things, and he was telling me that story, and he seems like, yeah, I still see him around.
He went on to do Rush.
Yeah, he did Rush, so I think he doesn't have to make up stories like that.
Yeah.
But you can notice a difference in some of the sounds, and he might have had that influence there, because it definitely, less bombastic. There's a couple of things. Little Miss Lover, I would have liked to have seen that done live because it was not much of a song on the record, but it was probably would have kicked out live. But the closing, Axis Bold as Love, when people say they play Little Wing to me, I says, no, play Axis Bold as Love. Like you might remember it for the big phase out intro exit that's really fantastic, great, one of the greatest exits of a record there ever was. But the chord changes in that are phenomenal. And again, young John Mayer on one of his albums, I believe, or live performances, covers a pretty wicked version of that. We were just discussing it at work here, how much John Mayer can sound like Stevie Ray Vaughan. It's pretty, like, voice and everything. It's like...
It could also sound like Dave Matthews on his first album.
Yeah, I guess, that's the sound. But I think it's his very good chordal work. But to sit down and play, like, a lot of guys can pick out the notes and the leads or something, or they say the feedback or the, of the first album. But when you get on the axis, you really got to know your chording, or you can't play that stuff because there's some serious chordal playing on that.
So now we come to the pinnacle.
Well,
album number three.
Well, and my favorite album I was picked from the first episode, Electric Ladyland, which is really was near the end of the experience. Jimmy having lots of walk-in friends, but a masterpiece, just like, just a masterpiece. It's the Jimi Hendrix, this is, I'm Jimi Hendrix, my third album. I'm going to do it my way. if you two guys from England don't like it, it's too bad. I mean, and Noel didn't like it, and eventually left, and it doesn't play on old album as it is. But I mean, the guests on it just make it. I mean, without Stevie Winwood, you wouldn't have that. And I don't know the name, and I should know the name of that wicked organ player who just made "Rainy Day Dream Away." I mean, you can't. And the whole jams, and then the songs. There's enough songs there. It's a true double album, again, with one throwaway song, Noel Redding. If that's what Noel Redding wanted to do in the experience, it's good riddance, Noel.
Thank you, Noel. Thank you. Noel Redding has left the building.
Noel Redding has left the earth, so rest in peace, Noel. God bless you and everything. As I said, I'm a big Band of Gypsies fan, so I like the Billy Cox version of the Jimi Hendrix sound as well, but Noel had as much to do with shaping that sound as Mitch Mitchell. That's the sound they got from the way they played. You know, I'm a big believer in the originality of sound comes. Like Black Sabbath was Black Sabbath because of the guys that were in the band. The same with Led Zeppelin. There's some bands that are totally dependent on every member. The Who. We'll discuss that at a later date. So the fourth album becomes the one that it's hard for me. Jimmy was putting together another double album. It was supposed to be called The Land of the New Rising Sun. Now, his family has possession of now all the Hendrix music, and they did a version of it, which I have, which, you know, it's pretty hard to anticipate what Jimmy would have done. The closest Jimi Hendrix after he was gone record that sounded like what Hendrix might have done would have been Cry of Love.
I love Cry of Love.
And so that would, I guess, have to be the fourth album.
A real blues to it, real nice.
Oh, it's very mature. And again, now you're dealing with Mitch Mitchell and Billy Cox. You're not dealing with Noel Redding at all. And that was a nice combination that we discussed earlier. It's Band of Gypsies meets The Experience, and that became Jimi Hendrix. So by this time, it's Jimi Hendrix records. And Cry of Love is a consistent record. There's not a throwaway on it. And now, if you could, like, I think there's some legal thing that stopped them from using all the tracks from Rainbow Bridge, which has all the rest of the tracks. Now, on the Hendrix Family's version reissue, which a lot of you younger people might have, you have this album. It sort of does it, but you really need to get all the tracks from Rainbow Bridge. And Rainbow Bridge is up there. It's a toss to me because Rainbow Bridge has this thing about Cry of Love and Rainbow Bridge. There's tracks on these records that you don't know. You've never heard. You have no idea. I put them on, people go, who is that? Back to Electric Ladyland for a second. I mean, Gypsy Eyes. If there was one Jimi Hendrix song in the world, that would be my song, Gypsy Eyes. It's just a fantastic song. I remember the review of it when it came out saying, he's ripping off Howlin' Wolf. Oh, come on. Howlin' Wolf never played like that. Never made it sound like that. And then there's House Burning Down. I mean, these are songs that the symphonic sound that he got is just, it's beyond the first two albums. So bringing it back down to what would be the fourth album, it kind of be a toss up between Rainbow Bridge, which you cannot get on CD because some cult got it. It was done for some film. The film is horrendous. There's some good footage in the film. actually, Jimmy's appearance off stage, he's drunk trying to pick up some chick in a basement of this cult thing that has no plot. And it's just like one of those hippy-dippy tributes. There's some fantastic, some really nice performance. But there's like songs off Rainbow Bridge are like Look Over Yonder. Have you ever heard that song?
I've heard Look Over Yonder.
Yeah. You know, Earth Blues. You know, some of these songs, but Look Over Yonder is not on the Hendrix versions of Land of the New Rising Sun, but you can't live with it. It was saying, you know, Dolly Dagger is, but it's not. So there's stuff, but off Cry of Love, I guess I'll make Cry of Love the pick now, or it would be a sidestep to Band of Gypsies, which is another one. Like, you could toss up, but there's only allowed four, so Band of Gypsies being one of my picks of my top ten. You've got enough there to listen to it. So I guess it would be... It's so hard for me. Cry of Love. I guess it would have to be Cry of Love or Band of Gypsies or Rainbow Bridge as the fourth one. Check them all out, but definitely, you know, stop. Just give a break from the songs that you see on a jukebox or some wedding guy only has Purple Haze. There's so many other good Jimi Hendrix songs.
Well, the other one it gets is Voodoo Child's Slight Return. I mean, it's
the extended version.
Yeah.
Not
the radio version. The radio version gets played over and over again.
Listen to the jam version. Voodoo Child's, the other one, I forget the total title of it. It's more of a complete slow-down blues, and that's which features Stevie Winwood and everybody jamming. It has sort of a can clapping, so it sounds like it's a live performance. That's an awesome performance. But so, like, there's so many songs. Have you ever been to Electric Ladyland? Rainy Day, Dream Away, Come On Part One, off of Cry of Love. I mean, Polygap, You've Not Lived. The guy did one solo. You've Not Lived. You heard the solo. What melodic scale is that? Please write that down, because it doesn't exist. So those are the four albums, sort of. Of course, Are You Experienced, Access, Electric Ladyland, and Band of Gypsies, Cry of Love, or Rainbow Bridge, you take your pick.
Yeah. Well, your admiration for the artist is quite evident. May I say that?
You're listening to Radio 2069 Worldwide.
Blah, 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 blah. It's time for What It's Worth.
This portion of the show is brought to you by no one.
Oh, yeah, For What It's Worth, where we give our 2 cents worth of what we like and what we don't like about the music industry. Tonight, it's my turn, and I'm going to talk about live bands then and live bands now. Now, I had the opportunity this last summer and the summer before of going to see Judas Priest, the new reformed Judas Priest, with Rob Halford. I saw Rob Halford and Judas Priest way back in the Screaming for Vengeance tour. And this time, they were just as good. They were different, but they were just as good. This doesn't always happen. And sometimes, your memories of what bands were when you saw them years and years ago can be taken away in a single incident, okay, instant, when you go see them now. Perfect example. I love Jethro Tull. We're going to do a retrospective on Jethro Tull sometime. One of my favorite bands of all time. The last time I saw them was on the Minstrel in the Gallery tour, and they were really great. They were at the peak of where they were as a sort of a commercial band. I saw them about 2 years ago at the Molson Amphitheater, which happens to be in Toronto, and they were still tight. They were as tight as Ian Anderson would like to say, a nun's bonnet, musically. But vocally, they don't have it anymore. Ian Anderson has had throat surgery a number of times for cancer, and he just can't sing. He can't sing the high notes. He kept turning away from the microphone. And I wish I hadn't seen them. I wish I had not seen them, because I would like to have remembered them as they were. Another incident, the latest Motley Who.
Two members of Motley Crue. Join the Who together in Motley Who.
Motley Crue. I mean, Mike Mars had just had hip surgery. He couldn't even move on stage, okay? It was like the Robot Man. He went to the right, he went to the left. He went to the right, he went to the left. This is not the Motley Crue that people remember.
You know, they each had 7 crew members to help them get into their spandex. They did. They had to have these guys with these things. It's a wrapper, they call it, that wraps them up. And they all took Botox instructions Botox injections before they went on stage.
Oh, God. Okay, and you know what?
I made that up.
You did make that up?
No, it's probably true. Come on.
Grannies, girls.
I was never a Motley Crue fan anyway. I just can't imagine. Like, to me, that's the kind of music that just doesn't grow old well. Like, they were drag queens in spandex, skinny little, you know, boy girls when they came out. That was their thing. And now they're trying to look heavy and mean. And they still, Vince Neil still sings like that voice. I mean, that guy, that's not singing.
Yeah, well, it's gotten worse. Okay? Well,
it's gotten worse. So.
It's gotten worse. And
there you go.
Thinking so... The new Who album is coming out, A Wire and Glass, and they are touring.
Who's left?
There's 2 of them. Now, this is not the Who.
And then there were Who.
This is not the Who. Pete Townshend can barely hear anymore.
That's right.
Okay? And, I have no idea what Roger Daltrey is doing, but the fact is that this is not going to be the Who you went to see.
It's wrong to call it the Who.
It's wrong to call it the Who.
Led Zeppelin had style. They just didn't bother. Led Zeppelin without Bonham, they stopped. And the Who...
Best example of this, Crafty, is a couple of weeks ago I had a chance to see Ozzy Osbourne at the ACC here in Toronto. Now, the last time I saw Ozzy was on the Ultimate Sin Tour. And, J.K. Lee was on guitar and J.K. Lee, who is a phenomenal guitarist and very underrated in my opinion. So a lot of water has passed under the bridge since then. But my friend phoned me up and says, I got a couple of free tickets and Rob Zombie was opening. So I thought it would be a fun evening. Well, I got there and I knew from the opening chords of I Don't Want to Stop that it was a mistake. A song that you'll hear later in a later review from me that I really love, the Black Rain album. I think it's one of Ozzy Osbourne's best album of years. So a song like I Don't Want to Stop, which was so powerful on CD, just limped along. Zakk Wylde, who has been on guitar with Ozzy forever, was turning down his guitar, slowing down the tempo, doing whatever he could to help Ozzy get through the set. Rod Zombie before had attitude to spare. He had a crack band. Ozzy just couldn't build up steam. To be fair, he loves what he's doing. He loves his fans, but it just isn't enough. He just stumbled from one song to another. It was kind of embarrassing and it was kind of sad because, Ozzy is known as like the Prince of Darkness, the godfather of metal. And, he just doesn't have it anymore. And there comes a time when, before people forget how great you are, you should hang it up. And I think that Ozzy's at that point of his life. And, he's 59 years old, and it was nothing like the show I saw for The Ultimate Sin, where Ozzy was at the top of his game, and he put on a fantastic show. He just was going for the motions and trying as hard as he could. He just wasn't coming up to the mark. So the final word here is, if you're going to go see a band that you loved, and they're coming back, they may not be the same band that you loved. And sometimes it's better to save yourself the disappointment. For what it's worth, it's how I feel. Okay, that's it for us. And remember, as always, this may not be how you think,
but it's how we feel.
Goodbye, over and out, from the Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show, Program 4.
Live on Radio 2069, worldwide.
You've been listening to the Irrelevant Rock and Roll and Music Show.